Mr. Wilmot, Reel 3. I think the next thing then is towards the end of October, the move to Leslie. Now, could you tell us about that move?
Yes, well, we found out that we were moving to Leslie. The regiment was moving to Leslie. What we call Leslie, it was a squadron as far as I was concerned. But as we weren't equipped with vehicles, and we had nothing else, we certainly had to march. There were a few vehicles to take things up, but the squadron as such marched from Kirkcaldy. Well, it was more than the squadron, because there were other squadrons in Kirkcaldy by this time. Now, I've got to realise this. I can't remember how many were there, but there were other squadrons in Kirkcaldy. So we marched then, whatever we were, to Leslie. And being a fife unit, our officers in charge knew all the shortcuts. So we marched not up the road, we went through little old trails, through little roads and through fields till we got to Leslie, which is, I don't know how many miles, not far, but a fair distance from there. And then we were put in various church halls. There was a drill hall, which we filled, and a church hall. And other parts of the regiment, I think probably A squadron, was there. But there was one squadron, which I can't remember what it was not in Leslie. It was in Markinch, which was outside Leslie. And this was a sort of a procedure we used to do even up to the end of the war. If we had a place, we usually kept the squadron apart. And there was a squadron in Markinch. And the name that I meant to now, because when we got to there, we were stationed in the Adams, in the church hall, the Logan Martin church hall, we must have been there. And that's where the food was. They made the food in the outside on the quadrangle.
Now, what were the billets like at the church hall?
Church hall, like with a stage on it, from the church. And we were sleeping, boom, 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 shoulder to shoulder, head to toe, because we were sleeping these days, shoulder to shoulder, head to toe, right round all the hall, nobody in the middle. And that was it. And we were in Norman Martin Hall. The drill hall, which was down the road from us, was where we always had to report. We had to get up in the morning, get sorted, and down to the drill hall, which was, there was people sleeping in it, but that's where the thing came to life, in the drill hall. The squadron leader by this time, now, was a man called Powell.
Is that Joe Powell, the one who was killed later on?
No, this one was. Oh, I don't know. He was killed in Google.
Joe Powell.
But P-O-W-E-L-L or something. Was that him? Great. I met him. He taught me a lot. He was the squadron leader. And he was there. But this time we had Sergeant Major Granger.
Now tell me a bit more about Powell. What impression did he make on you in those early days?
He was a kind of a man. He spoke to you with, and really spoke to you man to man. You know, you listened to Powell. And he always made me think that what he was saying was important. And it was important to me to listen to him, because what he was telling me was what was going to affect my life in the future. I think all instances about Paul, but he was very, very good, and I got on fine with Paul, and I still have trouble.
Perhaps we'll come to some examples of that as we go, of what he was like and how he inspired you.
He was an excellent person, very, very conscientious. I still have trouble.
And he'd replaced this Turkin, Major Turkin.
That's it. And by the way, they're all intermarried. Powell was married to an Aaron, you see. I mean, I didn't know him, but he was a superb person.
Anybody else new and important to arrive at the time?
I got to know the Colonel by then, of course. You see, the Colonel had never been with him. The Colonel was McIntosh. Colonel Sandy McIntosh. I wouldn't call him Sandy, but that might be Chinese. Alec would probably be his Christian name. But he had a bit manufacturing furniture, great furniture he manufactured in Kirkcaldy. He was Colonel McIntosh, wonderful man, like Mr. Powell. He was also a great man, but I'd never seen him or been involved with him prior to arriving in Leslie. I mean, we'd never been in Dundee, and we didn't see him at Adamsworth Hall, and it was really this little place of Leslie where we were coming together and beginning to know. The RQMS, I didn't know then, but we were beginning to meet all sorts of people. Sergeant Major Granger was with him.
What was he like?
He was a Sergeant Major, but he was really unfortunate, truly, that he hadn't had a long career as a Sergeant Major, so he really was in the same boat as everybody else, and he made mistakes. And nobody, well, we had to pay attention to him, but he was still, we wouldn't have sort of, if he'd said something, we would have thought twice about doing it in the middle of the room.
So he wouldn't, he didn't have the sort of sense of, not like Jones, R.S.M. Jones.
No,
was he a younger man, Granger? I mean, you say he hadn't been
assigned. He was younger than us. We were 20s, 21s. The bulk of the squadron was 20s, 21s. It was just erected. We were formed as all these people who joined in April. So you can realise that the average age of the squadron would be low. We had a lot of 18s and 19s with us still at that time, you see. We'd still had our youngsters, 20s, 21s. So the danger was a pretty, we could even be 30, 31 by that time, you see.
Any other people that are important, at the time that you remember arriving?
The squadron, SQMS was a chap called Nelson Taylor, I mentioned.
What's the S stand for?
Squadron.
Sorry, of course, yeah.
As opposed to C.
Company, yes. And but you didn't have much to do with him at that time.
He probably got the job as a territorial because he didn't know much about as far as I was concerned.
Now,
but he taught me my first lesson in the army. When I went to the drill hall one day, and of course always in a hurry chap, I went in the drill hall door, and by this time we weren't sleeping on the floor. We were sleeping on little trestles. It was a small thing about that height, and wood went on the top of it, and we were about 6 inches off the floor, sleeping, okay? And as I went in the door, I jumped over it, jumped over it diagonally, from floor to floor, this bay. I jumped over diagonally. And SQMS Nelson Taylor pulled me over and said, "Come here, why did you jump on the bay?" And I said, "Looked at him," and I didn't think much. I said, "I didn't jump on the bed, I jumped over the bed." And SQMS Taylor said to me, "If I say you jumped on the bed, you jumped on the bed." So I very quickly realised, not very sure, I said, "Well, it won't happen again." And that was it. So that was my first thing to, and the kind of man he was. But I think I had to be fair to them. The senior NCOs in the squadron were like ourselves. We were just learning day by day and learning by things they did. And it was harder maybe for them because they were in charge. So that was the drill hall, and we were doing all the drill
now,
there.
Now, one thing I want, what about the other ranks, the other troopers? Did you have any special friends? What were the sort of background of them, and were there any differences between, say, men who joined like yourself as territorials late, people who've been territorials a bit before, and conscripts?
Well, we were practically 100% territorials joining in April.
So you hadn't been topped up with militiamen?
No, nothing at this stage. We were still very much a family unit. With some NCOs who were NCOs because they maybe were swung in from the first line, but they didn't want them. But they weren't really part of us, and they were there. But I'm trying to think what you're saying.
That answers one part of it. I shouldn't have asked more than one question. The other part is, how did you get on with them? And
you
did you have any special mates who perhaps...
Well, you see, for instance, there was the Dundee Savings Bank, which became the TSB, which became Lloyd's TSB. Seven of their managers were in the Bank and Forth of Germany, second line, HQ squadron. And they joined, I think, there was only six in the squadron, there was one in the bottom. But they must have joined, like I did, to escape conscription. Now, they were managers of local little branches. You would have thought they'd have come quickly to the top, but they didn't, Funny, they didn't sort of get into the day-to-day soldier kind of activities, you see. And I knew all of them, and I know them today, the ones that are still living. And I found, for instance, there was a chap called Hogan, who was in the territory. He was very special because he was a telegram boy with the post office prior to joining in April. And being a telegram boy with the post office, he had one of these little motorbike things to deliver telegrams. So you realise, he was unique. And of course, we were going to be a squadron, HQ squadron was going to be having to supply all the communications levels. So eventually we were going to have to supply a lot of dispatch riders, you see. So he became the first dispatch rider, and he got his bike. But he worked from HQ squadron to the RHQ, which was in the main street, and he used to go to Mark Inch to the squadron that was outside, and he was a great lad, you see. And we were being taught how to drive bikes then. That was my main thing. And Hovey wasn't very good at teaching us, because Hovey didn't want to teach us too quickly, because there was only one motorbike, and he had it, you see. However, Mr. Captain Powell, the squadron leader, decided that I had to get into motorbikes, and he got me this motorbike, and I got the motorbike. After a few lessons, I got the motorbike from Hovey, who was experienced. And I had then became the dispatch rider. I only had one suit, by the way, and I had these deliveries to do, and I was sometimes sent to Kikori, and I had to go to markets every night with next day's orders. That was a compulsory run at night, taking the next day's orders to the squadron there, and I would do that. And remember, inclement weather, I had to come back to Logan Martin, to the cookhouse, and hang my clothes up to dry until I get them on again and drive back and forward. And I felt, by this time I was something, you know. I was really cocky-meaty with this thing.
What bike did you have?
In these days, well, that's the thing I remember now. We had a Norton. But these bikes that we had weren't army bikes. They were commandeered. So we had a Norton. We had a Triumph Speed Twin, which was a unique bike. And I can't remember the other one, but it was a Triumph Speed Twin and a Norton. I remember these clearly. And we were learning to drive on these bikes. Now, by this time, we probably had, I don't know how many bikes, we had more than a few. And we were learning hard, because although we didn't know it, the squadron was eventually going to have to supply five sections of seven dispatch riders for communication between A, B, C, C, and at its Q. That was going to be part of our job. So 35 people out of that load were going to be dispatch riders, okay? And one person was to be in charge of the bikes. That hadn't arrived yet, but that's what somebody was aiming us towards. And that's why it was so important. All the time we were in Leslie, we were learning to drive bikes out on the bikes. We were going in lines of four or five, so we must have four or five bikes, and we were learning. But we didn't have army bikes by that time. We didn't have the VSAs.
And did you enjoy the work?
Oh, absolutely. It was a revelation to me. I mean, working with things you were born to do, but the day-to-day work then, war apart, was just great. It was a great way to live. I haven't mentioned, of course, finance, which was a great thing. I mean, you just, life went on. But remember, a saddly thing, when we were mobilised and became part of the army, we were on 2 shillings a day, because the army wages hadn't got sorted out at that time in 1939, as you could know. In 1939, we were still on 2 bob a day. And then this SQMS Taylor, of course, was telling all the time ago, and he told us the thing which was really devastating. If you had to leave an allowance to your next of kin to qualify for the next of kin getting a pension if anything happened to you in the meantime. So it didn't become a voluntary thing at all. It was only compulsory. So we had to leave a shilling a day, and I left a shilling a day in the month, which she took the bank for me. And that was 7 bob off the 14. And they wasn't finished. They came up with another piece of information which I'll never forget. There were going to be things like kit you had to buy. You would lose kit, and kit you had to replace at your expense. And you would need something for credits. So 2 shillings a week would be taken off your wages for another colonist. So right away you were saying to yourself, well, it's 9 shillings a week, off your wages. And the balance would speak to you on feeding, which was about 5 bob.
And what would you spend it on?
Well, I didn't smoke in these days, which was a major asset. And believe me, cigarettes meant more in the war than most people that don't know about it will ever give credit to. I didn't smoke, so that was a great asset. So beer was cheap, and I didn't drink. Shandies was one of the things.
So you'd have a pint of shandy, but you wouldn't go out and have 4 or 5 pints of bitter?
No, neither. Again, remember, you've got to remember, we had a squadron born at 21-year-olds who hadn't been led on various paths, and we were still a very good, unique, good-living kind of a bunch. That's the kind of living seems strange. So we didn't have that. We had a few wild ones, but there was no great drunkenness as such. So that was there. That was taking us up to Leslie.
It sounds like most of your time you were there, you were just learning to ride the motorbike. And then having learnt it, you were whizzing around as a dispatch rider.
That's right, I was. Now, remember, I was lucky. I mean, there was only one dog doing that, and I made sure nobody else was going to get it. I loved it.
Did you fancy being an actual signaller, which I presume they were also training up the signal sections?
We were trained to be signallers, but why this as such hadn't been done? We were learning the flags, you know, the A, B, C, the British.
So the dispatch riders would also be the signallers?
Yes, they would be. We were learning that.
So you were learning.
We did not learn the Morse code, because I can come to that later on. Morse code was approached for many times. Morse code was out. We were in there, signaling as such. We learned the flags by reading the flags. We were back to the walk. You were in the block, you're back to the stadium, and you were doing the flags. We did that.
Anything else you were doing?
We were in Leslie at Christmas. We left Leslie before Christmas. We were in Leslie, and things were going on. By now, the 1st Regiment, of course, had moved to Aldershot. I can't remember. They were in Aldershot, but we were in Leslie. And they were getting themselves sorted out in Aldershot.
What about a coastal defence role?
So, as I recall, we did exercises in the beacons that we had by going all round to Loch Leven, because somebody told us that they may land on Loch Leven. With the flying boats or something. So we did little, we were called up one night and we were all over the fight, going around there, taking up positions at various crossroads in case they come ashore and could turn down the fight course, which I didn't think they ever would. And we did that kind of thing down there. But again, it was good for us because we were called out, we went out. Exercises weren't very popular because remember, we weren't equipped. We didn't have great coats, I didn't have a coat.
Now, sticking to the coastal defence exercises, I mean, I'm sure the Nautix is a part of it, but did you have actually armoured cars?
No.
I mean, not just headquarters, but I mean, would the ABC... ABC?
We didn't have them at all. So we weren't equipped with vehicles to in any way be an army.
So when you went to Loch Leven, what would you... You were just practising getting there?
We were practising, but we were learning how to get there as a unit. I suppose we were there as a unit. I remember we went out and we had to be in certain places, and we had to stay in certain places till somebody came along and agreed that we'd arrived in the right place. Now this was a very important part. I mean, when you were sent out in a vehicle to go to a crossroads in the country, they wanted to be sure you got there. I mean, there are many crossroads, and we were always staying until somebody came and checked that we'd arrived where we were supposed to arrive.
Now, what about this the problem? It's mentioned in the history as well, this problem with greatcoats, and there's a story of some officers had to get up to see whether the weather was suitable for an exercise.
Yes, well, often me, but that was, well, I didn't know that. We weren't equipped. As I say, when I came home soaking wet on my motorbike, I was right into the cookhouse to hang my clothes up.
So you didn't have greatcoats. So what were these night exercises like then?
Dressed and that we just there was no great military part about it. Nothing was military up to now, really. It was just learning to come together as a group, do what you were told, arrive at a place where you were told to go to, you know, and come back. And I suppose that was training very much so, because map reading and that kind of became a very big major part of our operations.
But not that you hadn't started your map reading then, had you?
No.
So anything else you were doing?
We were still very, very inexperienced up to then.
Now, the next move then?
The next move then would be before Christmas, when there was snow on the ground. Terrible winter, 39-40. One of the worst things was over that winter, you know. One of the worst winters for goodness alone. But we then all had to go to the station in Leslie. There was a railway station, the Dillard Company was there. We went to the station in Leslie and left as a regiment for Aldershot. The date.
You don't know when?
It was before Christmas.
Round about December, but you don't know.
Before Christmas, I remember.
Now, where were you in Aldershot?
The same barracks that the 1st Regiment left to go to France.
Which barracks?
Berlin. Never forget them. I understand after I found things out, they were the same barracks that they left to go to the Crimea. Not the war. They left from there to go to the Crimea War. Huge rooms with tin metal beds, a great big fireplace with nothing in it, cold, freezing cold. Absolutely. And one of the worst winters, remember, I don't know what goes in, but we had brazier parties out in the cold, working all night long, keeping the systems working, especially with an armament.
We've just had a quick look at Sellers, and you actually agree with Sellers now that you left in mid-January 1940. That seems right, you know.
And the snow, it was heavy snow on the ground.
And the other thing is, it was Beaumont Barracks, which is similar, but, you know, not quite. Beaumont Barracks. Now, what about the Christmas celebrations at Leslie? Were they any important at all, or you just don't remember them?
Now that you've mentioned we were there, in fact, I wonder, Christmas celebration. See, remember, we were so close to home, we could get a weekend leave sort of thing and go home.
We'll leave that, Leslie, then. So the barrack, you were in these barracks and...
Vacated by the first day, but that I know.
And what do you remember of the sort of training you were doing in January and February of that year? Apparently, very bad winter.
I don't remember Mark leading us up to me.
What about drill? I mean, was this real square?
We drilled a lot. The square was just outside. Well, the barracks were up a stair, you know. They were on one of these long balconies that you get in Mormon Park. And we trained there. Marching, drilling was very much part of it.
Would you do things like route marches and or to toughen you up?
I don't remember.
What about PT? Ordinary.
Yeah, PT, lots of PT. We had by this time now, when we got, I don't know about Bowen, but in the next move was along to Farnham. By the time we reached Farnham, we had an APTC sergeant instructor with us. I can't remember his name, I know him, I have a picture of him. But he was a member of the Army Physical Training, and he was then seconded to the 504 to be, he did his own thing. Bars and exercises, very much so. Nice.
Did it improve your physique?
Oh, I wasn't good at it. I kind of climbed ropes and that. I mean, I always did. I just thought to do the one I was good at, did the other thing that I had to do them, you know. But I was still dispatch riding by then, so I was very busy at Aldershot. Paul and I worked well together, you see, and I was busy doing that.
One thing, an interesting thing, is that they apparently found a tank in the regimental coal house.
I heard about it. That was the first thing that left it. So I remember one of the things was we still had a band of pipes. I remember the pipe band being involved for the mounting guard. And we were mounting guard with the pipes, and everybody was coming to see us, you know, all the soldiers from our barracks, and we were mounting guard with the pipes.
Was a pipe band, I mean, you're obviously very Scottish,
yeah, but the first line had a pipe band.
But was it an important thing to you as a Scot to have a pipe band and mountain guard and that sort of tradition of it? Did it matter to you?
Not to me. No, it didn't really make that to me. But I remember it. I remember mountain guard. I remember being on guard in Bowman Barracks, marching around there. There wasn't a big deal. We were on the shot for a while. The Canadians were coming into Aldershot and filling it up by that time. That's why we had to leave, I think.
Now, how long were you at? I think you weren't actually there long at Beaumont, were you?
And then we moved to Farnham, which was not very far from Aldershot, and we were back in Holmes again. And we were the first troops to be stationed in Farnham. And Farnham was a very, very nice place.
And what were the billets like? Was ordinary, you know, with...
Just big halls and rooms and sleeping on the floor. See, we slept on these tin beds.
You weren't with families then? You were.
No. No, we weren't with families, no. We weren't with families.
And what sort of training were you getting on with there?
Again, the regiment, I wasn't really aware of what the regiment was doing as such. I was so busy doing my one army thing, looking after things and being very efficient at dispatch riding and carrying messages back and forward, which I did very well. But I was brought down to earth by Captain Powell, I would say.
In what way? Tell us that story.
Captain Powell, who I very much liked, and he's a great officer, he came and called me in one day and says, I've taken you off as a spy. Well, that in itself was a real blow to the troops, but it proved that he was watching, because I didn't think that it could be done without me, you see. And he said to me, I'm going to put you on to another thing. And I ended up on menial duties. Latrines, sort of cleaning out this, and I was on that for a wee while. And I just thought to myself, in after years, that he'd realised I was getting too big for my boots, I think. In a nice enough way, I thought. But he just realised life was more than just me driving around on a motorbike. And he gave me that. And he told me afterwards it was good for me to be brought down a peg or two. And that's what I like. And we were still very much as we were in Dundee. We were all together as a group. None of us had been promoted out of anything. And that was it. We were well received in Farnham. It was a great place, Farnham. The memories of Farnham from a sporting point of view will be the hospitality we received from the people. It was absolutely tremendous.
In what way? What would they do for you?
For the start, the ladies set up a hall, a great big hall. I understand it's still there. They set up this great big hall in Farnham for our teas and coffees and biscuits and whatnot. And night time, they were there to entertain us. We were very fortunate. We were invited out to some of the larger houses there. One man had a big business, and we were out there playing tennis on his tennis court and things like this, which I said. So we were quite a group there, and very fortunate in Farnham. I understand that when we left Farnham, it was a great big hoopla, which is in Sellers book. R.S. Andrews was still with us now, because I can remember R.S.M. Jones organising a collection from the regiment to supply a clock and a thing which went in that hall. And I understand someone was down there recently, and it's still there with our little stove. And it's still in Farnham. But they were very good to us in Farnham. We did, that time, one thing in Farnham, you have to talk to them. We did something in Farnham which involved our motorbikes. We had hauled our motorbikes, and I can remember this clearly. Two of us had to go out, we were sent out in twos to various spots. And I had to be out there in the morning and at evening, at the top of the hill, just at the end of the Hog's Back. And we had to dump our bikes and climb to the top of the hill and keep looking out for paratroopers. And we were doing that. That was one of our main jobs now, you see. And we were getting formed into this, the bikes. We hadn't formed sections by this time. We were still a group. I could tell you more, but if I go into section of that, I'm in Ireland then, you see. So we were still being given jobs. But I remember clearly having to go out to this place on the Farnham end of the Hog's Back, which is near the end of the Hog's Back, as you might know, and climb up this hill, and we had to look there for any signs of paratroopers being dropped.
And what were you to do?
We had to go back and report. We don't search the land as such. We were only there for observation point of view. We would have to report back. But Runfold rings a bell now. That was the village, Runfold, where we had climbed the hill, and there was a squadron there as well. But then the squadron didn't have facilities for bikes. All the bikes were in our headquarters squadron. But that was there. I learned to go 100 miles an hour on the Hogback. My first ton was there. I came off on the Hogback. And things were like, can you get off? That was that was another thing. I came off a lot of bikes, and Paul was saying to me, "The army can't keep doing with the bikes when you want." So maybe that was another of his little things at me. I'm becoming very involved with doing that. Anything that had to be done, I was there wanting to do it, volunteering for everything in sight.
Did you hurt yourself in any of these accidents? Did you hurt yourself in any of these accidents?
No, didn't dog bikes. No, I loved them. And I didn't have a bike, I couldn't ride before the war.
So, when you fell off, though, at 100,
Well, I didn't fall off at 100.
Right.
No. But I did it. I was up with that doing that on the Hog's Back. It was a wonderful feeling.
When you did fall off, you didn't have any leathers or anything like they today?
Nothing at all. We didn't have any equipment as such for bikes. No. We were getting jackets, a sneaker's jacket by that time, But we had no real equipment for the bikes at all. We were still in the formation period of learning of all of them, going where we were told, and being sure we got to the right place and this. The rest was to come.